Welcome back. Thanks for hanging in there so far. In this module today, we're going to show you some more code about service bus and media services. But before we do that, we had a little discussion about the ACS filter, and there's one step I forgot, which is actually setting up. I showed you how to set up the ACS filter settings in your Azure portal for the Azure service, but I didn't show you how to actually set that up in your Eclipse project.
Yeah, so Martin's going to show you that. I can go through that very quickly just on my little computer here. So let's just imagine I'm going to do it just based on my little sample application, not the Azure chat. But so Brian showed you earlier how you configure the authentication service on the Azure side and the cloud side, but you also have to do a parallel configuration on your deployment side so that there is that handshake between your deployment and the cloud that is possible between your application and the actual authentication service. So the way you would just, the main entry point for that is really when you go to your build path for your Java project, configure build path. And again, I mentioned earlier that there are these libraries that come as part of the Azure Toolkit for Eclipse. And one of those libraries is this Azure Access Control Services filter. So that's the one that you want for enabling that automated authentication. So if you click next on that one, this takes you through a simple wizard, which basically asks really just three questions, which mirror the questions that we were filling in on the Azure site. So you just provide the same information as you did on the Azure site. So there's the login information, there's the URL of the server, and there's the public, there's also the public key that you want to use for your encryption, for your signing. So just that. And once you do that, then your application will be automatically configured in such a way that this logic, this authentication logic, will be installed on the server that your application will be deployed to, and the server will automatically know that, oh, for this application, I'm supposed to use this this access control services filter, and that will do the automatic redirection. So at the end of the day, when your application actually gets a request, after it's been authenticated through ACS, you can get the data of that request, the actual XAML token from the request attribute. There is an attribute called, I think we call it ACS XAML. I can't remember, but we can look it up later. So that's basically how you get the raw XAML XML basically of your authentication from ACS. So you can basically figure out, okay, here's who the user is. Yeah. So that's basically how you set it up on the client side in a nutshell.
So one important point is there's still no code here. You basically Right. set up your service, you fill out the information that I showed you on your ACS service under Azure Active Directory in the cloud, and then you go into your application here, you say build path, add library, and when you actually add this, you mirror the same information in here, and when you say finish, basically this is just a way that your app can talk to that service.
And so, it's a pure configuration thing. Yep. It's, there's no code that you have to yep. write here.
Yeah, once you put in the HTM for your homepage, and it redirects everything to the ACS filter service, and then the ACS filter service knows where to send you back to the application.
Okay.
So that's
Let's
it.
Let's move on.
So as I mentioned, so today I'm going to be talking about, in this module anyway, I'm going to be talking about service bus and media services. And basically, the SDKs we're going to cover, Service Bus SDK API and the Media Services API via the Java SDK. Let me show you again how that works. So I did actually try this out. You know, you saw maybe at the beginning of this whole thing when I showed you the first demo, there was a video that said that it wouldn't work, but it was working for me again. So let me just go back into the application itself. Where's my application? Sorry, hold on. There we go. So the application itself As you can see, is running on Tomcat. And what I'm going to do now, this is somewhat different than the photo. The photo basically, as I showed you in the last module, the photo, when it's actually saved, just stores it straight into Azure Storage. And Azure Storage then retrieves the photo and displays it in the feed over here on the right. And when you do likes and things, those are stored in Azure Tables, likes, comments, and actually the post text that you have here as well. So I'll add a video this time. And actually, let me go back. I want to show you something important. When I post a photo, the photos actually load up. If you'll see, you get this little processing message here, and they take a couple of seconds to load up. So there's the photo. Now, let me show you a video. Where is that video I have? Uh-oh, where'd it go? Oh, pictures, all files. I had a video. Oh, I know where it is. Duh. User error. It's in videos, not in pictures. So you'll notice when I post the video, it's much larger, but it actually, in general, let's hope it does. Yeah, it takes less time than the actual photo does. So why? Why does it actually do that? And you notice it's not in the status feed here. That's because what we do behind the scenes, anybody who's ever been on other social media sites, they're familiar with this. You post the photos fairly quick, you post a video, and it takes forever, and you're walking around looking at your phone, waiting for it to actually load up. Well, what we've done is actually solve that by, we actually load the video into temporary storage. And in that temporary storage, we kick off a service bus job, and that service bus job actually manages that video. So it watches to see when the actual item is in storage, and then it kicks off a process to take that item out of storage and put it into our media services, which is another service on Azure. And what media services does is it actually encodes that video in multiple different file formats so it can be streamed using Media Services streaming service out on the back end. And both the encoding and the streaming can be scaled. I've got them on really low scale, but you can actually scale these up quite high, and I'll show you how you do that in a few minutes. And then the idea here is once that is encoded, it actually goes into a special storage that's related to media services. So there's two different storages. There's a temp one that you load the actual file into. Then media services has its own storage where it stores all the encoded files and then allows you to stream them from there. So it's a little bit different process, and the whole point was we're trying to save people the time and hassle of waiting for their video to load. It'll actually load behind the scenes, and eventually it'll show up over here. It takes a little while for the media services to run because I've got it on a really low. I got my encoding set really low. It's a cheap app. So let me just go back to the slide. So that's basically, message expiry. So the other thing is service bus. There's a timer function that we use from Spring, part of the Spring framework. And the Spring framework runs a timer based on the actual add time and the expiry time, which is calculated when you load the video. Based on that, whatever the expiry time is, kicks off another service bus job that actually deletes all of the video and any related messages, comments, likes, or anything on there as well. As I mentioned, when you go into the app itself, you have an option for different expiry times and things like that. So let's go into Storage Explorer for a second here. As I mentioned in the last module, so the Storage Explorer is a free download. If you search for Azure Storage Explorer, you'll find it there. So our photos is here. If you look in temp now, there's my video. This video is sitting in here, and it's going to be sitting there until it's been encoded and loaded into the storage that media uses. If for some reason the encoding process breaks or that file never gets into the storage that media services is related to, it will not be deleted from here. It will try to run that file and encode it and run it until it can't anymore. Just because, you know, and the idea here is there's a transaction that happens, and that transaction is not complete until the file is actually in the media-related storage. Let me go back to the slides. So that's the slide. So this is exactly what's happening here in a diagram, as I described before. So the file comes in, it goes into blob storage, which is the first green box here. Service bus picks it up and sends it from there. So service bus is basically watching. Whenever a video is loaded, service bus will actually put it into the encoding. And there's something called encoding reserved units, which is your unit of scale for doing encoding. You can actually create, you know, if you think that there could be a one, in this case, just one video, there could be 1,000 videos or 1,000,000 videos running at once. All these jobs can be run separately and scaled in Azure. And once that is encoded, there's multiple file formats that get created, and those get put into another blob storage related to media services. Those encoded encrypted files, when you actually, when you create the media service, so it creates a bunch of URIs related to those files, when you click on the video in the application, it goes back into blob storage. Depending on the format that you've got, it actually determines which is the best, whether you're streaming this on your phone, you're streaming it on a web browser, a high-capacity web browser, a low-speed connection, it determines which ones of those would be better from the streaming endpoint, and determines which one of those formats in the blob storage should be returned for streaming. Then it sends it up here to the streaming unit. And once again, there could be one video streaming, could be 1,000,000 video streaming, so you can actually scale your streaming endpoints as well here.
And this media API that we're talking about here, that's another part of the Azure SDK for Java. So this is just right. Code. You just call classes from the media library, and you can do all of that directly from Java clients.
Right. So the Azure Media Services, not just Java, you can run it from, you know, Ruby. There's all kinds of things you can run it from. We have all these SDKs for that. But in this case, we're using the Java API for that. Yeah. So that's in a nutshell how it actually works. And then expiry, of course, is there's a timer job, as I mentioned, through Spring, and basically that just loads up a service bus job that makes sure that the deleted the video and all the related comments and everything happen. If one of those things doesn't happen, then the whole thing stays until the full transaction can be completed. So if you configure the media services, you go through the management portal again, new app services, media service, click create. You add a name and region, and then you choose the default, which is creates that secondary storage account that I showed you. There's a default name that looks really encrypted, and that basically is used to store encrypted media. Let me show you that. I'll just go in here and I'll show you that. It's easier to show it than describe it. So, where's my media services? Media services, there we go. So I've got one media service set up. You can protect the content, but basically, if I want to do this, I just say new app service, media service, quick create. I put in a name. I put in a region. There's just a few regions for media services. And then this is the storage account I was telling you, sort of a name, very unique name. So when you're looking at your actual storage accounts on Azure, you can tell which one has been generated by you and which one's been generated by some service. If I go in and I show the storage services, that's how it works. And you just say create media services actually creates what you see here. And then configuration. So important here, streaming endpoints. I've got it just set up as default. So streaming endpoints is where you actually create these, and streaming units, I've just got two units right now. So basically 400 megabits per second is what my streaming capacity is, but I could increase that up to 10. For now, I just have it at 2 just because that's the easiest setting for me.
So what does the setting depend on? I mean, why do you prefer one or the other? Is there a price or is there?
It's just that way it encodes videos faster. Mm-hmm, you know, it'll encode, it actually encodes multiple videos faster. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't slow down. It's not waiting for other other media to finish before it starts another job. It basically just creates threads for each one. Once again, so that was just for streaming. So that was the back end. The front end of the media service. Encoding could be the same. So I've got it set at 2 units right now. I can roll away up to 25 units, and basically that's just a way of describing capacity that the encoders are going to use when they're actually encoding the data. So streaming, of course, is how many people can stream this at once, how fast can streaming be, and then encoding is, you know, how many people can be encoding, or how many files can be encoded at once, and how fast can that encoding be? And that's in a nutshell how you actually set up the streaming service, and you encode it. Now, there are other things that you can do in terms of for streaming endpoints. When I go in here, there's some configuration you can do as well, which allows you to set up some caching. Allowed IP addresses for doing caching, Akamai headers if you want to do that. There's all kinds of settings here that you can use as well to customize the media service. But basically, we've got a basic media service running as well. Down here at the bottom, there's something else called Enable CDN. Content Delivery Network is a way to actually spread out and deliver your content in a more scalable way as well. So the media services itself for encoding and streaming can be scaled. And then you have a content delivery network, which basically takes your videos, your streaming video versions, and caches them in different locations, locally or in one data center or around the world in multiple data centers, and allows you to deliver that as well. And that's plugged straight in to your media service. It's not something you need to write into your application. For the purposes of this app, this is a pretty simple app. I haven't enabled the content delivery network, but you could if you wanted to. And you just do that by creating a content delivery network and then clicking on enabled CDN. This is grayed out because I don't have any CDNs set up. So now if I go into storage, I can see my actual, in this case, it doesn't display that service just because it's a back-end service that's used for my media. All right, so I showed you the scaling, so different options for scaling for streaming endpoints and encoding. Once you've got all that done and you've got your service up and running, it'll be showing as running in the portal. Then you need to get those keys. There's a couple of service access keys. You just click on the bottom link. You get the name and the managed service access keys key, and that allows you to talk. So as I mentioned before, secure communication not only from your app to the Tomcat server, but then the Tomcat server through the properties, the resources.properties file, authenticates with each service individually. So nobody else can access your blob files, your table storage, your media services, things like that. It's all controlled through those keys in the application. So Service Bus, as I mentioned before, what do we use Service Bus for? In this case, we're managing activities. We're not scheduling activities. That's done through a timer, but the timer that we have, that's part of the Spring Framework, actually fires off a service bus transaction through service bus queues. And that sets up the media encoding, which is a multi-step process, goes into the temp storage, goes into the media, and then goes into media services file, storage file. And then we actually manage expiry as well. So the timer watches out for any media that's expired in according to the expiry details that are in the storage account and just deletes them and any related messages. If for some reason one part of those particular processes doesn't happen correctly, the whole thing backs out and it tries again later. So that's the whole idea behind Service Bus. It allows you to do things. So to configure a Service Bus, once again, through the portal, is service bus again? Service bus, there we go. So I've got my service set up here. You've got queues, topics, and several other things you can do. You can scale service bus as well. If you've got multiple applications running things, you can actually scale this directly through here just using this slider interface as we did before. So if I say new app service, service bus, I can create a queue, a topic, a relay, notification hub, or an event hub. If I say queue and I say quick create, it's just basically a queue name, the region we want to run it in. There's more regions for this than there are for media services. And then the namespace that we're going to use for the actual queue itself. And that's .servicebus.windows.net. It's available through URI. But then when you create it, you get something like this. And this is my Azure chat for Java service bus queue. As you can see, not a lot of messages being passed through here. If I click on View Connection String, that's where we get the information that we integrate with our application. And basically, the properties that we want to put in there, when you say View Connection String, you want to put in your namespace, Azure Chat for Java, sbq.ns, or underscore ns. Then the root managed shared access key is the actual name. It's just, it's generally always that name. You can change it if you want. And then you put the key value in there so that it can access things directly.
I think a nice thing about these properties files, the way you're showing them, is that this enables our audience to take a look at the code and kind of track down, okay, well, where do I set? How is it used in the code? And then they can just look at it and say, oh, here's the piece of code that actually references that particular namespace or that particular property, that particular setting. So I think that's the main point here, to let you navigate through the code more easily as we talk about this, because it's pasting all this code in the slide deck. At some point, there's a limit to how much it makes sense.
Right. Actually, so just so you know, the service bus namespace, for example, service.bus.namespace, let me show you how to do this. So I actually did this in Eclipse a while ago. As I mentioned before, Eclipse is great for reading code, not so great for finding code, in my opinion. But anyway, so if I go into the source files here, for example, and I control H. So service bus names. Oh, I did it in the wrong place. Hold on. Service bus namespace. Did I spell it right? Yep. Good. So search for that. Oh, wait. Man, I did it wrong again. Hold on. Control H, file search, service bus namespace. Oh, it's not on the actual application. Search, file search. There we go. I should be able to click this. Then it's going to just search the project that I have here. Yeah. So I go down here. And you see it's actually in the constants. So then you have to go into the constants and then you look for service underscore bus underscore namespace and basically trace through from there. Search, just file.
You can do references. You just look up references.
Oh.
Yeah, just right click on that, on the service bus namespace, that variable.
Yeah.
No, up in the code.
Oh, in there, okay.
Yeah, just on the variable itself, not the string variable, not the string itself.
Oh.
To the left, right? And then just look for references. So there's going to be a references right in, below the middle.
Okay, right? There we go.
And then you can just find the, well, project probably.
Whoops.
Why not?
Yeah, okay. I do it old school. Hierarchy, maybe? Nope.
Oh, anyway, our audience is smarter than us.
They can figure out. There's probably people out there. I'm going to check the comments in a minute, and they'll probably be able to tell me how to do this better. But service underscore bus namespace. There. So then it takes me to the service bus, Azure Chat service bus.java, and that actually takes me through the code that actually manages the service bus here.
That. Yeah, and if you expand that, you can see the actual reference.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
But anyway, so this takes me to the code. So this is sort of a way of searching.
Just an example of navigating through our code, and you will not be as clumsy as we have been navigating through our code, but I assure you. But
yeah.
But that's just how, you know, a good way to cross-reference the slide deck and the actual code.
Yep. Yeah. Absolutely. Yep. Good point. So basically, then you set up those properties, and then control media processing. So it takes the raw video. One of the things that I forgot to mention, so it generates a shared access server URL. So the shared access server URL is basically the URL that's in the blob, because the blob actually contains a URL that you can access things. And it generates a key on the end of the blob. The key on the end of the blob basically tells, this is something that Service Bus, and only Service Bus, can use to access those files. So no other process or anything can actually use that Service Bus key to access the file. It's a shared access service that you set up actually through the Service Bus. And from there, you locate the video using that SAS URL. You basically pass it into the media services, which encodes it, sets it up for streaming with the multiple files I mentioned before. And then it deletes the downloaded file from the temporary location once all the files have been encoded and loaded into the media services storage. And then there's two, in Azure Table Storage, Azure Storage Table, there's two values that are actually added, the SAS URL and the expiry time. And if any of the process fails, the original video file will be left where it was, and it'll be processed again in the next go-round. So that's the idea there. Code again. Yay! So yes. Code. So this is the code that writes to temp storage. And basically, it is very similar to the code you saw for writing to the photos, a little bit simpler. So it basically creates an input stream that just loads the code into that file. But then there's a little bit more that happens after that. You generate the SAS URL in the second piece of code here.
And SAS is a shared access signature.
Share access.
It's a temporary URL that basically includes a sort of a cookie in the or obfuscated GUID, I would say,
right,
in the actual URL. So so that way it's not discoverable, and you can set expiration dates on it or whatnot, and then that way you have something that is fairly secure and not discoverable, but it's still publicly available, I guess.
Yep. And then what it does is it basically just takes that code and passes it to the to the media services here. So the next thing, we take the temp storage, we write it to media services, so we go and grab the SAS URL, and we use the media services to actually get the URL and start processing that.
Clean it up and all that.
Yeah, we clean up the file name just in case there's anything that the media services doesn't like in the file name, and then we basically prepare that for encoding. We use basically the input stream that grabs the code and uploads the media to the input stream that's used for media services. And then with this, we then create a streaming URL, and that streaming URL is actually posted to the Azure Media Services storage. So that's actually just creating the media file, taking it out of temp storage, putting it into encoding, and loading it back down into the media services. The last thing we do is media expiry. So this is another thing. So not only video, but pictures and just messages get deleted as well. So there's a multi-part process here. First of all, we find the actual media. It's in that table that I mentioned gets created inside storage. So reference to that is there, and with the expiry time that the actual image should expire. So we get the media URL. We look up the photo container, which is basically the blob storage, and we remove that photo from storage. Then the next thing we do is we check, we make sure that we can delete the messages, and those messages are just anything you type, you know, this is a comment to go with the photo, things like that. Delete any associated likes for that as well. And then you delete any comments, delete any likes, and then you delete the actual messages that are associated with that photo and delete the photo itself. And basically that's all that happens with that. And the service bus controls the whole thing, yeah.
One great thing about these examples is that it's not just about the actual details. I mean, we're spending a lot of time on the details, but it gives you a sense for interacting with the Azure SDK for Java and the Azure services. So you can see there's a lot of classes that this code is referencing, which are Azure classes. They come from the SDK. They're not. I mean, most of this stuff is just straight from the SDK. So that gives you a feel for the kinds of interaction that you have, I would say simple interactions that you have through code with the Azure API surface.
Yep. And then last but not least, if you want to delete any video, that's in your that's actually in your media storage, and that's an asset. It's not necessarily a specific item in the blob. You get an asset ID, which is related to all of the streaming video files that are in that blob. And then once you've got that, you can actually delete it using the delete asset class. So that's actually simpler than photos, but it just automatically goes into media services and says, hey, delete all these items that you have in storage, instead of having to go into the storage and actually manage it yourself. So that's, in a nutshell, Service Bus and Media Services. Let me just go in. I was just about to go in and see if we have any questions, Q&A. But that's it for this module.
Do you think it would be a good idea? Because one thing that we haven't done with the sample app is we haven't yet integrated it with my very sort of oversimplified demo at the beginning of kind of putting this into a Jenkins deployment process and all that. So I'm wondering, should we just look at the Jenkins setup right now, just how I got that automation working, or?
Oh, well, that's a good moment. That's actually the next module.
Okay, so we're going to look into that next module.
Yeah, we're going to talk about Jenkins and Hudson, and actually, no, that's module 6, but we're going to talk about it in real detail in that module.
Great.
So, yeah, we'll be talking about Jenkins, Hudson, Ant, how you process the Ant in future modules, for sure. Somebody was asking about, let me see, a link to the Azure Explorer. So all these things, I generally don't publish links. I understand if people are looking for them. I just generally search for things. So if I just search for Azure Storage Explorer, it's usually the first link that comes up. There you go. So it's a CodePlex project. You can download it, and it's free. It's very useful to download. Oh, hey, one other thing. Well, we got some time. Time is it? Yeah, we've got lots of time. So the other thing I want to show you is if you go to the Eclipse Marketplace for the Azure Toolkit for Eclipse, there's two ways to get it. And if you want to follow along with the next module at home, we're going to actually have that's where we're going to be talking about the Azure Toolkit for Eclipse in great detail. We're going to talk about deployment and a few other things. So there's two ways to get it. If you just search Eclipse Marketplace Azure Toolkit, you'll come to this page, and you can drag this this actual item here into your Eclipse workspace. This is a fairly new feature, so should work. I've tried it, works fine. If I just drag that into my Eclipse, it tells me it's okay. There's another way to do it, which is in Eclipse. Let me see. Oops, I missed Eclipse. Where the heck's my Eclipse? There we go. So help, install new software, and the URL you want. Everyone's probably done this already, but DL. What was it?
DL.MSOpenTech.
MSOpenTech.com/Eclipse. Eclipse. So.
HTTP at the beginning.
Oh. It's funny it doesn't have autocomplete for that. HTTP.
Yep.
There we go. So you get to the Azure Toolkit for Java. Just click on it. And from there, you just take it to the next step, and all items are installed. But if anyone else wants to do that, so we're going to be talking a lot about the Eclipse Toolkit, and we're going to show you how to actually set up a deployment project. So anyone wants to follow around at home, they can either go through the marketplace or through help install software to get the Eclipse Toolkit set up. The address, once again, is dl.msopentech.com/eclipse for that. And we didn't have any other questions, so I guess we'll end it there. And we're going to come back in about an hour.
Right, that's a meal break, right?
Yes, we're taking a meal break, so we'll be coming back in about an hour. And this afternoon, we're going to be talking about deployment options. And we're going to show the Eclipse Toolkit, how you actually deploy things to Azure. We're going to talk a little bit about Jenkins and Hudson. We're also going to, Chris Reisner's coming for a session on a module on websites. He's going to show us how to do pretty much everything there is to do with websites with Java. And then after that, we're going to have a DevOps and continuous integration session where we'll be talking more about Jenkins and Hudson and a few other tools that you can use for processing, automating your processing. Yeah. And
I think the automation part is especially relevant because it's one thing to talk about all this integration that's available through the IDE itself. But, you know, it's all great. Like, you got started, you got things deployed to Azure, but how do you automate it? How do you make it part of your everyday process, your production process, or whatever you have? And that's where the plugins for Jenkins or other common automation tools come into play. And I think that's an especially relevant part of that, that talk. And it's also the integration that we've done recently, the work with Jenkins and Ant is pretty recent. So that's something, again, that's going to be new to this audience as it is to everybody out there since we just shipped this latest toolkit release a few days ago. So you're going to see a lot of new stuff, basically, in that module.
All right. So we'll take a meal break about an hour from now, and we'll be back to cover those topics. Thanks.